So we're reading this morning from Srimad Bhagavatam. We're in the 8th canto, which is entitled Withdrawal of the Cosmic Creations. And we're on text 11 and 12. Do we chant both of the verses or just one? Just one, the first one. Shri Shuka Uvacha. Agyam Bhagavato Rajan Prahrado Balina Saham Bhadamitya Malhapragyo Murdnyadhaya Kritanjalihi. Shri Shuka Uvacha. Shri Shukadeva Goswami said, Agyam, the order, Bhagavata, of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Rajan, O King, Maharaj Parikshit, Prahridaha. Did I say that right? No. Prahradaha. Maharaj Prahlad. Balinasaham. Accompanied by Bali Maharaj. Badham. Yes, sir. What you say is all right. Iti thus Amala Pragya. Prahlad Maharaj, who had clear intelligence, Murdni on his head, Adaya accepting, Kritanjali with folded hands, Parikramya, after circumambulating, Adipurusham, the Supreme Original Person, Bhagavan, Sarva Asura Chamupatihi. Well, I was thinking that I went into the other shloka. I guess we can continue. There's a few more words left. The master of all the chiefs of the demons. Pranataha. After offering obeisances. Tat anugyataha. Being permitted by him. Lord Vamana, Pravivesha, entered Mahabilam, the planet known as Sutala. Translation. Srila Shukadeva Goswami said, accompanied by Bali Maharaj, my dear King Parikshit, Prahlad Maharaj, the master of all the chiefs of the demons, took the Supreme Lord's order on his head with folded hands. After saying yes to the Lord, circumambulating him, and offering him respectful obeisances, he entered the lower planetary system known as Sutala. Next text, I'll just chant the Sanskrita myself. Ataho shana samrajan hari narayanon tike asinam ritvijham madye sadasi brahmavadinam. Translation. Hari, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Narayana, thereafter addressed Shukracharya, who was sitting nearby in the midst of the assembly with the priests, Brahmahota, Udghata, and Urdvaryu. O Maharaj Parikshit, O Maharaj Parikshit, these priests were all Brahmavadis, followers of the Vedic principles for performing sacrifices. Brahman santanu shishyasya karma chitram vitanvataham yatat karma suvaishamyam brahmadrishtam samam bhavet. O best of the brahmanas, Shukracharya, please describe the fault or discrepancy in your disciple Bali Maharaj, who engaged in performing sacrifices. This fault will be nullified when judged in the presence of qualified brahmanas. Purport. When Bali Maharaj and Prahlad Maharaj had departed for the planet Sutala, Lord Vishnu asked Shukracharya what the fault was in Bali Maharaj, for which Shukracharya had cursed him. It might be argued that since Bali Maharaj had now left the scene, how could his faults be judged? In reply to this, Lord Vishnu informed Shukracharya that there was no need for Bali Maharaj's presence, for his faults and discrepancies could be nullified if judged before the brahmanas. As will be seen in the next verse, Bali Maharaj had no faults. Shukracharya had unnecessarily cursed him. Nonetheless, this was better for Bali Maharaj. Being cursed by Shukracharya, Bali Maharaj was deprived of all his possessions, with the result that the Supreme Personality of Godhead favored him for his strong faith in devotional service. Of course, a devotee is not required to engage in fruitive activities, as stated in the Shastra, Sarvarhanam Achyuteja. By worshipping Achyuta, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, one satisfies everyone. Because Bali Maharaj had satisfied the Supreme Personality of Godhead, there were no discrepancies in his performance of sacrifices. There's quite a few things going on in this pastime, described here in the pages of Srimad Bhagavatam. And we could even say that what we have heard of is somewhat of a complex situation. Life is such, it's almost always complex. and it's not always easy to navigate the complexities of existence. With our existence comes the responsibility of our thoughts, actions, deeds, things we do, even things we don't do. Everything has some kind of a consequence. What we find here is, I guess we could, at least for some reasons, I am going to single out one thing, which is a conflict. Conflict between what Bali Maharaj thought was right and between what Shukracharya thought was right. All that already happened, so that's sort of behind us. We already went through that. But it is interesting now that having sent Bali Maharaj and Prahlad Maharaj, who were related as grandfather, what's the grandfather and grandson, right? Virochana and Bali is the son, so it's grandson and grandfather, right? we see that Vishnu comes to prominence. I mean, he comes in as a small child, but at the end, Vishnu shows in his full glory, dominating the scene. And as a person who's now dominating the scene, he has received, if I remember correctly, he's received prayers or stuti or glorifications from Prahlad Maharaj. And then Vishnu turns towards Sri Prahlad yet again. And expresses, I think he calls him, what's the term? Vatsa, which is a very endearing term. So very, very intimate, which is another interesting concept in Vaishnava literature, the intimacy between God and the devotee. I mean, so intimate that sometimes of certain intimacies of Krishna with his devotees, we don't even speak. They can be so confusing. There it is. We find a very intimate relationship between God and his devotee. And Vishnu is addressing Sri Prahlad as Vatsa, a very endearing term. I think Prabhupada translated it here as son. Dear son, right? Means a calf. So something that's like really drawing like sweet feelings from you. Like that very, very protective, gentle, kind of like when people see something cute and go, oh. Something like that. Is that about right? But those are the kind of feelings that Vishnu had towards Sri Prahlad. And so what apparently, that's another interesting twist in the plot, the person who appeared to be the great loser in the whole story turns out to be the winner of the situation, namely King Bali, Bali Maharaj. We find that his guru, Shukracharya, was a guru, and he was a brahmana. Brahmana has a superior position towards a kshatriya. But this is devotional literature. And as devotional literature, it glorifies the substance. So we do have social concepts for the sake of social harmony, and even more than that, important, nevertheless, important, but the content, the essence of it all is actually devotion, bhakti. And so we find, like in the example of King Ambarish, King Ambarish was a king, and Durvasa Muni was a brahmana. And the brahmana, wherever he showed up, he was honored and glorified as a superior person. And even the king glorified and honored the brahmana. When the situation became particular, then brahmana became quite embarrassed. Not only that he was a brahmana, but he was a yogi. He was supposed to be above. The translation doesn't work, is it? So he was a not only brahmana, but he was a yogi. So the combination of the two, brahman and a yogi, he was supposed to be fearless, at least fearless when it comes to the physical frame. Yogis are supposed to rise above the pains and pleasures of the body. But when he was threatened by death, he ran. He ran for his life. And it almost, well, almost, it is, it's not almost, but he was chased by the Sudarshan Chakra, the chakra of the Lord, the personal weapon of the Lord. And the chakra chased after him for quite some time. The chakra did not need time or effort to catch up with him, but the point was to show who's who. What we find in that story, that again, a brahmana who did not display, at least within the scope of that pastime, did not display the content or Krishna consciousness or bhakti, was the embarrassed one. And the one who walked around humble and socially inferior turned out to be the hero, King Ambarish. So we find a very similar situation here, that a person who walked humble around, and he was completely humiliated by the Supreme Personality of God, that he was tied up like an animal. We could imagine that, and this is how people function, right? When we give advice to someone, and the person does not follow our advice, and then a calamity comes upon them, then we have a tendency to say, "I told you." But as soon in this situation, as soon as Bali Maharaj has found himself in this situation, apparently having not followed the instructions of his guru, he comes out a victor at the other end, because he was a devotee, and the whole pastime is actually meant to reveal who really Bali Maharaj was. Very complex situation, like what in the world was he doing, upsetting, literally upsetting the creation of the Lord. Like God created this world in a particular fashion so that souls with a particular karma are born in particular places so they can work out, live out their karma, learn the lessons they need to learn and move on. And all of this demons upset when they try to take over Svarga. And this is what was going on here. And these plemena, tribes. You understood that word. These demonic tribes were headed by a great devotee of the Lord. And we could say no one even knew that he was a devotee. Like, what the hell? Very complex situation. And in some ways we could say that on some level what Shukracharya was saying was right. Was totally right. But what's interesting that there is truth that is more true than the other truth. So the truth that's more complete, that takes into consideration more, is a superior form of truth. Disobeying on the part of Bali Maharaj, disobeying the order of his guru, was actually a good thing, a superior thing. And now Vishnu himself is bringing this up. So, now that they have gone to a place, a devotional place, Prahlad and Bali, as Vishnu sent them, Vishnu is turning over to Shukracharya and is asking him, "So, what was precisely the fault of Bali Maharaj? Can you point that out?" For some reason, Srila Prabhupada, and it'd be interesting to look at the commentaries on these verses by the previous acharyas. It'd be my guess that that's why Prabhupada brings it up. Srila Prabhupada brings up the question as to what kind of a justice system is this? Justice system where you're judging someone who's not present. This is a form of injustice. If you accuse someone of anything, then you also ought to give the person a chance to defend themselves. Is there equivalent in English for the saying "kadia"? Oh, yeah, there is. There is. I remember now. What's the Bosnian one? "Kadia te tuži, kadia te sudi." Do you have in Slovenian that? No. I know they're from Bosnia. The judge the jury and the executioner. Yeah. Executionist. What's the term? Executioner?
Executioner.
And by the way, this is a tendency of people who love to hate, which is another interesting phenomenon. People just love to hate and love to pass judgments too, especially in that kind of heated state of hatred, without giving due opportunity to the defendant. And Srila Prabhupada brings that up, like, what kind of a justice is this? But Prabhupada says, but in front of the brahmanas, it is okay. I have to admit that I read Bhagavatam, I don't know how many times, and don't remember reading this one. As a brahmachari friend of mine jokes that he feels that Bhagavatam is ever fresh because it's so big. By the time he reads it, he forgets what he read. So I guess it's quite fresh for me too. this idea. Just the other day, I was reading a lecture that Srila Prabhupada gave, speaking about the importance of higher castes within the society, namely the brahmanas and the kshatriyas, and the qualifications of the brahmanas and the kshatriyas, giving more emphasis on the brahmanas, and how the modern world is suffering tremendously for the lack of brahminical culture. And one thing that the brahmana, unlike anyone else, really, really appreciates is the truth. So that's a passionless person in whom exists only one passion, that is the passion for truth. So it's so difficult to find an objective person, as objective as a brahmana, to the point that even if the defendant is not present, the brahmanas are so objective that you can feel secure in their judgment. We also find that if we go back, that what Shukracharya said was true, but it was a poor truth. It was true for someone who's on the platform of fruitive activities, for a person who's motivated by fruitive activities. And in the purport that I studied, Srila Prabhupada nearly exclusively focuses on the idea of fruitive work. What is the fruitive work? That is a selfish work. That is a work that may focus on different things which appear to be valuable, but those things are valuable only insofar as they feed the selfishness of the person who's interested in them. Shri Shri Panchatattva Ki Jai. So the object of fruit of work could be anything. Could be reputation within a society. Could be money. Could be some form of power. Could be, I don't know. Anything. Anything could be object of fruit of work. And this fruit of work it is a destructive process. And it's a destructive process that's studied throughout the Bhagavatam. We have so many stories in the Bhagavatam of people who act in fruitive manner, and all they find is destruction around themselves and ultimately self-destruction. Because ultimately in the very nature of the self, ultimately the very nature of the self is such that does not allow for fruitive work. In other words, we're made in such a way that fruitive work is destructive to us. The very nature who we are contradicts it, these are two different elements. They don't work together. The example that came to mind is there are three stories in the Bhagavatam, one after the other. Story of Daksha and his hatred or his ill envy, ill feelings towards Shiva, and the whole episode. It's hard to tell when and where it started, but Bhagavatam, at least in the Bhagavatam, we find that the emphasis is given on the moment when Daksha enters arena, and that everyone in the arena stands up except Lord Shiva, and here's where the problem begins. Well, probably began way before that, because that's how it is. We are in this world because the problem began way back in when we were with Krishna, and when it began, we found ourselves here. That is the beginning of every problem. And so we could say that that was the beginning of Daksha's problem too. What we found there is just a scene of utter devastation. That is also a form of a fruitive work. The thing in question wasn't money, but it was some kind of a pride. There's some envy going on. I envy what you have. Social position, it's one of the greatly coveted things, social position. And the interesting thing is that, you know, truth be told, we all require some kind of social position. Like, none of us could live with being object of hatred of everyone. No, we all require people that think well of us, that are kind to us, that we have people that we can be kind to, and so on. So everyone requires some kind of social position. So people typically endeavor for social position, even unknowingly. Like that's one of the great challenges when you give a lecture. Because the need to be socially accepted is so great that you will mold your lecture just to harness the satisfaction from the audience. So in some ways, this is a legitimate need. But as the saying goes, every criminal has an excuse. There is a legitimate need, but we take it way too far. We go way beyond legitimate. And it is always so. Very interesting. I looked it up when I heard Devamrita Swami once making reference to some study was done where they interviewed people who had $1 million in cash, $1 million in investments, and $1 million in real estate. And this was like, I might be 15, 20 years since I looked this up. It's been a while. So those $1 million now are worth way more. And none of them felt secure. Like they're now, people, you're safe now. No. And they're right. There is no safety in this world. You could have everything and not be safe. You could just trip over the stairs there and, you know, fall down. A war can break out and everything you have get plundered. And there is no safe position in this world. So that is a legitimate excuse, you could say. But where's the limit? Where do you draw the line? And so this is a huge problem. In other words, our own vigilance as to what is the motivation is supreme. Supreme may not be supreme, but it's very important. Very, very, very important to be vigilant. The other story is that of Dhruva and Suruchi or his father. But this story has an interesting twist. Dhruva started off just being of, his pride was hurt. But he, at the end, turned out to be a devotee. Very interesting twist. Very interesting twist. He started off with a, not his desire to, he didn't have a desire to become a pure devotee. He just wanted revenge. But he really wanted it. And he was blessed by Narada Muni, who then took the sincerity of Dhruva, which then led him, interestingly enough, to a position where he found himself before God, to the point that he became a pure devotee. Very interesting twist. And then we have, at the end, we have Prithu and Indra. Where Indra is, there's a tendency to think very ill of Indra. Indra is a very exalted, very fine person. But Bhagavatam gives quite a few, and the whole tradition gives quite a few examples of Indra, even though so exalted, so advanced, and so highly socially placed and entrusted with such a huge responsibility, doing things which you would not expect from such a person. Which is also a great thing to think about, that even such great people can fall prey to the problem of this nature. And we have a huge contrast of Indra, who's very, very, I'm not telling the story because I assume everyone knows the story, but maybe I should, I don't know. Yeah. Well, Prithu was performing sacrifices because he was told to perform sacrifices. These were horse sacrifices. And 100, right? 100? 100, but he never made the 100th, yeah. He was instructed to do so. Why? So that his power increases. Why? Very interesting thing. Why would he want to be powerful? He wanted to be powerful so he could do his service. And he was instructed to do so. He wasn't power hungry. he just wanted to do service. And in order to do service, he needed to have certain abilities. So, okay, do these yagyas. And when he was about to do the 100th one, Indra, absolutely unprovoked, started to hallucinate. And this is what tends to happen to people who are overly attached. They become phobic. Attachment tends to produce this phobia. Greater the attachment, greater the phobia. And so he became phobic, hallucinating that this person will take over my position. I cannot allow for that. And then he would steal the horse. Once, twice, three, I don't know how many times he stole the horse. His son, yeah. Wasn't he at first himself and then his son, yeah. And then again we have a very interesting contrast between the two when, was it Brahma who told Prithu to pull back? Was it? No. Prithu, I think Brahma told him. Svambhuvamana? Okay. he was told, quit. You were right. Indra is foolish. He's not doing the right thing. But look, he's so attached. You're good. No worries. Let us not disturb him. He wanted to kill him.
Yeah, he wanted to kill him.
Yeah. 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 And he just pulled back. He no problem, as he was told. Because his motivation all along was not a fruitive one. In other words, he wasn't doing things for the things which will give him some sort of selfish powers. But he did things for the sake of service. And so this is the difference between bhakti and that which isn't bhakti. Bhakti is motivated by, ultimately by devotion. So the activities are motivated by devotion. Everything's done because it's a good thing to do, because it ought to be done, and because I have devotion for the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Whereas the fruitive work is a work that's done out of selfishness, and it's an utter contrast to devotion. Different initiating all different kinds of deviating sampradayas and and then we find in the 15th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, we find by the way, the topic of the 15th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita is liberation. And there we have description of a banyan tree that exists on the water of the desire, and that is the selfish desire. And this tree ought to be chopped down with the axe of detachment. What's the Sanskrit term? Urdva mula. No, how does that go? No. One, okay. Somewhere other, I can't remember. I wasn't able to catch it. I just remember the phrase of chopping the tree down. That's the next verse. So I was listening, okay. Dridena, Chitvena, something like that, right? There's Drida also, like with the... No. Okay, I won't speculate anymore. I'll open up Bhagavad Gita in few minutes. But this tree needs to be cut down. The crucial element in terms of today's presentation is this detachment. What are you detached from? Well, you ought to be detached from that selfish motivation, which is the root of the fruit of desires. There's a whole chapter dedicated to fruitive work in the teachings of Lord Kapiladev, for example. It's a very, very important phenomenon. Asanga Shastrena. So asanga, you disassociate. No, what is it? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Cutting it down.
Yeah. So, I had all the elements floating in the head, but they weren't lined up. Thank you. Okay. Om Tat Sat. Are there any questions or comments, perhaps?
Hare Krishna. Okay. My question would be that, let's say there is a very Krishna-conscious person, a spiritual master, and he should have an etiquette and be very, you know, look in a way. And
he should have what?
He should be an example. Like, he should be an example. Let's say that he sometimes behaves in ways that would just make the devotee feel more closer to him, just like a family. You know, when you mm-hmm. don't just act like very perfect and mm-hmm. you know, is that true?
When you don't act very perfect?
Yeah, like an example. You know, you're not always like a very very let's say.
Why would affectionate not be perfect, for example?
No, what I'm trying to say is that, yeah.
Frivolous, okay.
Yeah, very, you know, mm-hmm. High spiritually and always talking about high stuff and, you know, it's just, maybe he wants to get closer to him. Like, can that happen? Is that normal to happen? I'm not sure. This is what I'm asking. It's, yeah.
Did you understand, Maharaj?
Well, if you have a spirit master, you expect him to always, well, you know, set the example of how to become Krishna conscious. Sometimes he may act in a more familiar way. Mm-hmm. It almost seems like he's too familiar. Mm-hmm. Almost on the verge of, you know, frivolousness.
Yeah. It can help the devotee to be more to understand better Krishna consciousness. That's my question, actually. That's like, to understand
what
better.
What do you say,
Mark? No, we have to get, everyone has to have an example of how to act. And therefore, we have a founder, Acharya. So we go outside the way that he was dealing with his disciples. Mm. So therefore, we're inventing something, which is, you know, called mental concoction. Mm. So Prabhupada, for instance, at the beginning, he acted some ways with his disciples, but he didn't keep on acting the same way mm-hmm. after 20 years of dealing with them. And also, you know, his way of intimacy was like, for instance, when he was in New York, 26 Second Avenue, when people used to come and visit him, he talked with Brahmananda about, oh, Bruce, your name is Bruce, I remember Bruce was the was a general in the British Army in India, and he started to talk about India and the Raj and things like that. So he didn't talk about, you know, what did you see at the movies yesterday. He talked about, you know, history and culture and things mm-hmm. like that. You know, but Prabhupada, he talked about things outside of just straight Krishna consciousness, but
maybe useful.
Useful.
Yeah. Instead of useless.
Yes, I just want to know if you can get attached to Krishna through that familiar behavior of the spiritual master. So yes, it's I got the answer now.
Yeah. But I don't see why would not someone not be able to be affectionate but not stupid. Like you can show affection and closeness in Krishna conscious ways. You don't.
I was standing there waiting, just, we were in Buffalo and Prabhupada was going on engagements, but his disciples were always late, getting ready. Every time I went on engagement.
Prabhupada would wait.
So, that's why Prabhupada used to go to the airport 3 hours. So I was standing there waiting for us to go on the engagement. Prabhupada walked up to me. And, you know, probably you'd think he was like really, I mean, he was actually like short compared to...
Physically, yeah.
Yeah. He walked up to me, smiled at me, and said, so, how are you today?
Yeah.
Probably feel like I was aura reference out of this experience, so he's always trying to get me to relax a little bit.
When I was reading the Lilamrita from Prabhupada, he was going through so many issues in the beginning, and that probably makes us understand that no matter what level we are, we can become Krishna consciousness, conscious. And that's also, yeah.
I mean, it's a journey, you know, wherever you are, you start a journey towards Krishna. It's not like you're in a certain position and no, you cannot go towards Krishna. It's a ridiculous idea.
There was one resident of Haight-Ashbury. His name was Mouse. Rabbit, actually, his name was Rabbit.
Sounds very hippie-like.
He never bathed. He never, you know, did it. You know, so he smelled terrible. And he wanted to see Prabhupada and all the devotees. He goes, no, no. But then finally, you know, someone asked Prabhupada, is that yours? I'm not saying how Paul talked to him. So Prabhupada actually talked to him. Mm. He didn't get, he never gave a devotee, but Prabhupada gave him some mercy. Maybe he took shelter of the rabbit.
Okay, anything else? Oh, there's something from the internet.
Yes, questions from the internet. So, Bhakti Yoga Tilburg is saying, Hare Krishna, we adjust the way we speak to the particular audience that we are speaking to. But maybe also this is good so that it is easier for the audience to accept what we are saying. This was the question.
Oh, I didn't understand. I'm sorry.
Well, this is in reference to when you were talking about you don't want to make adjustments, social adjustments, just to kind of please your audience.
Oh, I see. So, could you read that again? Let's see if I get it now.
Hare Krishna, we adjust the way we speak to the particular
audience. The way we speak to an audience, okay.
That we are speaking to, but maybe also this is good so that it is easier for the audience to accept.
Oh yeah, that's a civilized thing to do. But see, what you have there is a clash of two things. You have the internal thing, which is a motivation, and then you have an external thing, which is just a form. And it's really difficult to, you can't always tell by the form what the intention is. So any civilized person who's attempting to communicate is attempting to communicate successfully. So that always takes into consideration who the audience is, what language do they speak, you know, what are their concepts, what are their traumas, what are the things that we both agree upon? And then when you find that common grounds, then you build up the conversation from there and so on. So, yeah, of course. But it is a very different thing when you're trying to merely please the audience. You're ready to adjust to any extent just to be socially accepted. Now, that is an extreme example, but most of the people do the adjusting in some ways, maybe not 100%, but to, not because there needs to be adjustment for the sake of successful communication, but for the sake of acceptance. Acceptance that socially I be accepted. That's like two different things. Okay, I'm looking at you, but actually,
okay, Hare Krishna, we have two more questions. Actually,
two more,
yes,
two more, and then we close the shop.
All right, again from Bhakti Yoga Tilburg. So, Hare Krishna Maharaj, in devotional life, to make advancement, you need to be humble, but to become humble, to need to have some advancement. So, how to go about this?
What came first, chicken or the egg? What's that?
And where's the rooster?
Yeah. It goes little by little. You do a little bit of this and then a little bit of that and like that. It's not that you need to get one thing in order to get the other completely. Was that a good answer, Maharaj?
Okay. So, from Avadutarai Dasa, he says, Vaishnava Chakravati writes, one commits violence against the householders by taking...
One commits violence
against the householders by taking too much or too little. And the question is, violence by taking too much charity is more less clear. But why is taking too little charity violence? Actually, please explain both. Thank you.
Okay, I'm laughing, but because I'm thinking of some incidences in my life. So, but it's a serious question. So I apologize for laughing. What's the reference of committing violence on a householder by accepting too little of a charity from? Too much we can understand. You go to a home of a householder. Leave with the truck. Hare Krishna. Mercifully. I'm not sure what's the Shastric reference to taking too little, though even I could see how that could be construed, that violence in the sense that, let's say for a sadhu, what's the verse when at Krishna's name giving, what's his name, the priest who did the Gargamuni, when he came to meet Yashoda and Nanda Maharaj, then he spoke that verse, Grihinam Dina Chetasam, how does that go? Nishreyasaya Bhagavan, doesn't matter, but I remember now the crucial line there is Grihinam Dina Chetasam, that it wasn't Gargamuni, this was Nanda Maharaj. He actually said this. He called himself a householder, and as a householder, is Dina Chetasa, is of a low consciousness. This doesn't have to be so, and a devotee is a devotee, but he humbly took this position. The household doesn't have to be, but it tends to be a unit of selfishness, where a person just hoards stuff for the sake of, realizing the attentions of one's own needs for fruitive work. And so that's why one of the religious things for householder to do is to give. To give charity and to feed others and like that. And so I guess when a sadhu comes, then a householder typically gives something or gives also to others, not only to sadhu. So I guess we could conceive of householder giving too little, so that's sort of a violence. But I don't see how when sadhu comes to a household, he doesn't take. Like, you don't take charity, you're given charity, or an offering, depends, charity goes down, yagya goes up. So I'm not quite sure how does that work. Would you have any thoughts, Maharaj? Correct, yeah, we need clear reference, yeah.
Because otherwise, the sadhu car, the typical example when the sadhu goes to the house and he asks, can give you donation, and the householder comes and gives him some ashes because he's so greedy. The sadhu accepts him very humbly.
Yeah.
That this is the beginning of your charity.
So yeah.
He accepts whatever is given to him.
Yeah, we don't have examples of sadhus begging for charity and then being given something, then they say, well, give the double. Give double that. Only the airport. So. Was that the last question?
Yes, that was the last question.
Okay, that's so... we can end here. It's 9:10. Grantara Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai.